from the Samira Foundation, this is Demystifying NMO and MOG, where we bring together the world's foremost experts, the doctors dedicated to studying it, and the patients who live with it every day. With support from Genentech. Welcome back for another episode of the Demystifying NMO and MOG podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dawson. Today's episode, we're going to delve into a topic close to many people's hearts, the vital role pets play as companions and emotional support animals for individuals living with chronic illnesses or disabilities. Whether they have fur, fins, feathers, or scales, many people just can't live without them. For countless people around the world, pets are more than just animals. They're beloved members of our family, offering unwavering love, companionship, and comfort during life's most challenging moments. But for those navigating the daily hurdles of chronic illness or disability, the significance of this bond transcends mere companionship. It becomes a lifeline, a source of solace, understanding, and joy in the face of adversity. Our first guest is Maria Borrego. Maria is a beloved voice within the NMO community, TSF's Ambassador for New Mexico, and our Welcome Manager. Her recent experiences have led us to today's topic.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Good. How are you today?
I'm good.
All right, Marie, thank you for coming on to the show. I really appreciate you stopping by and spending your time with us. First of all, I want to talk about you recently spent the weekend in New York City to talk about NMO. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes, I was in a NMO short film with Alexion, and they premiered it at the Say No to NMO event. It was an amazing and great opportunity, and just being in New York, it was so great.
Is that your first time in New York City?
Yes, it was my first time in New York City, and it was so amazing, being able to see Statue of Liberty, eating all the great food. It was so amazing.
What was the film about?
So the short film was about three patients, so me and two others, and we had to write a letter to each other about our journey with NMO. And we wrote our letter, and so each one of us read it to each other in the film, and then we got to come together and meet each other. And then it was just like how it was meeting each other, and how like we could totally relate to each other on our stories, and then just like what our families have to go through with our diagnosis. It was very impactful, and just it was very special to me.
I can only imagine. I know we always talk about how important community is within rare diseases, within patient community. And so I think a film, from the sounds of it, a film like that kind of helps people better understand how important those connections are. Are we able to like go on the internet and watch the video? Is it posted anywhere?
So it's not posted as of yet. It will be released probably pretty soon. I can't wait till it's more available, because it's an amazing film. And just having the community and support, and just like showing the community that NMO will not stop us, and the sky's the limit.
Now, we're going to shift gears a little bit. From what I understand, about 30 minutes or so before it was time to start the panel, you had gotten some news. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what happened?
Yes. So before the premiere kicked off, I got some news from back home. I got a call from my dog's veterinarian notifying me that my dog passed. I just couldn't believe it, because I know he hadn't been feeling the best, but of course they say that, you know, when dogs or pets sense that you're going to leave them, you know, they get like stressed out and then they start not feeling good. And it's happened in the past. So I never expected that call from the vet. And
Bambi was a dachshund?
Yes, Bambi was a dachshund. He was 11 years old. And it was even more emotional because in the film, his picture came up because he was part of my recovery.
When did you get Bambi?
I got Bambi in 2012. He was just 6 weeks old. And I actually got him before I had a transverse myelitis attack. So he knew me like being just like my normal self. And after I'd gotten sick, he still loved me just like my normal self.
Oh, I can imagine. How did he handle you getting sick?
He actually took it pretty well. He just always wanted just to be by me, just to be just like loved and petted. And yeah, he just wanted me to love him and he wanted to love me. My legs were very swollen and he would see my dad massaging my legs. And so he would get on the other leg and he would either start licking it or he'll start with his little paws, like pawing at it. And it was just always just like, oh my gosh, like how does he know? And I actually was a Hoyer lift patient. So every morning he would go and he would get up my dad and my dad would get his coffee and then Bambi would sit down because Bambi's treat in the morning were carrots. So he would go and he would tell him in Spanish, because we speak Spanish, boliche. And that's what we would call the carrots. And Bambi would run and grab his carrot and run to my room. And he would know that, you know, shortly after, my dad, after drinking his coffee, would come to my room to help me get up. Well, you know, there were some days that my dad would take longer than normal. And so he would go back into the kitchen to see where was my dad at, to tell him to come to my room to pick me up. And he would come to my room finally and pick me up. And Bambi would go behind the Hoyer. And he would just follow us. And then after, you know, when they would bring me to my chair, they would have to open the Hoyer's legs a certain way so they could let me down into my chair. Bambi would know where to stand so he wouldn't get in the way. So it was just really like amazing to me that he knew where to go, where to stand, and like everything. And then after they would let me down into my chair, Bambi's little, I guess I call it his little house, would be underneath my wheelchair. And, you know, you could always find Bambi underneath my wheelchair.
Too cute. So he adapted pretty well to being around the wheelchairs and the lifts and all the medical equipment. Didn't seem to faze him too much.
Yes, he adapted very well being around the lift, the wheelchair, and then when I started walking with the walker, he was very, he knew like where to stand and how to walk by me. And it's pretty like amazing to me because we would go on walks and there were sometimes there are days that Bambi would want me to be holding him on his leash. And he would just like kind of like pull me, and then he would know like where to turn in, and he would start turning before we even turn, because he would know like that's where we always turn. So I thought it was just pretty amazing. Like Bambi wasn't my guide dog, but he was just like something special. Like he knew exactly everything, and it was amazing. He impressed me more. I mean, he was super smart. I mean, I if Bambi could talk, it would have been great.
Yeah, dogs, they're absolutely amazing. There's no other species on this planet who has the capacity to love human beings the way dogs do. I mean, the modern dog has evolved to be a part of life for us. They're just incredible. So you're getting ready to go out to be a part of this panel discussion, and you get this call from your vet. How were you able to kind of get refocused?
So it was very hard. I did have to take a minute for myself. And I stepped out and I just kind of pulled myself together. And what I think what really helped me is when Sumaira had said, Bambi is proud of you. And just hearing those words really helped me to pull myself together and know that Bambi is proud of me. And he would want me to move forward. And so I just pulled myself together and said, you know, I came here for this event. This is big. This is my first time being in New York. I have to be here for the community. And so I guess I had a strength in me that I didn't know that I had, and I just pulled myself together and I went on that stage. And there was a part that I had told him that my Bambi had helped me just get through, you know, being in a wheelchair, and just helped me to adapt more with my life with NMO. And he loved me unconditionally, and I touched on that, and I did start to tear up, but knew that, you know, I was here to talk to the, or to touch on the film and to talk to, or to tell the community that NMO won't hold us back. And it truly won't hold us back. And I knew with this film that even though I lost a pet, like I had to show that NMO won't hold us back. And now I know my Bambi wouldn't want me to hold myself back because of his passing.
That's incredible. How is your family doing with everything?
It was very shocking. My mom did have to step away with me because she cried. Bambi was actually closer to me and my mom, because, you know, he would, you know, be around with us more. And then my dad, he also felt like very sad, because that was his little buddy. He would my Bambi would go and wake him up in the morning. You know, he would sit out with him on the porch in the mornings. They actually also had a little game around my wheelchair where they would chase each other around my wheelchair. And so my dad would chase Bambi, and then Bambi would stop. And then he would say, like, ha, you got me. And then Bambi would start chasing my dad. And they would just go around circles around my wheelchair. And so it was just like a little game. So of course my dad was sad, and then my brother was also sad too, because Bambi actually has helped my brother. My brother, he is autistic, and he has anxiety disorder. And so you know, when he would be feeling on his bad days too, Bambi would just lay or sit with him, and they would just, you know, that would be his little buddy too. And it was just, it was very hard for all of our family, and it's still very fresh and very like sad and lonely here, you know.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
And like it has been like super hard. Like there's some days I'm like, I can't believe he's gone. We recently got his ashes, and it was very hard. We got his paw prints, front and back paws. And we were driving, and then all of us just start crying. We all just start crying, and then all of a sudden I start to feel like super hot. It was crazy. Like I hugged the little urn, and I could feel his presence. And it was nice. it was something. And actually, when we had came back from the event, I didn't know if I wanted to see my Bambi. You know, like that. So I just kept like talking to myself, like, do I, do I not? And you know what? I am so glad I did. Because, you know, I went into the vet office and I was like, you know, I want to see my Bambi. And they said, okay. And I had asked him, did he suffer? And he said, I don't think so, because it happened so fast. And so that kind of brought me some peace. But, you know, any kind of pets, can bring a person comfort and can get them through their hardest times in life. And even, you know, pets are our best friends. And I will say my Bambi was my best friend. And not having him now just seems different. And I just would like to tell everyone, if they have pets, love on them, because you don't know when it would be the last time. And I tell myself, if I could tell Bambi one last thing, one last time, what would I tell him? I would tell him, I love you, Bambi. And thank you for being there through my hardest times. And I'm so sorry, my boy, I couldn't be there for your hardest times. But we are stars. And run free, boy. Eat all the carrots. I just wish that I could hug my Bambi again. And I can't. He's gone. And if I could only hug my Bambi again, I would hug him so tight and I would never let him go.
Next, we're joined by Anne-Marie Naraki. She serves as TSF's Ambassador for Illinois. Anne-Marie is a licensed social worker, and she works with clients on a range of issues and life situations. Thank you, Anne-Marie, for joining me today and coming on to talk about the wonderful world of pets. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I guess, well, let's start with me as an NMO patient, although I don't really think that, you know, defining myself with a disease is a thing, but as an NMO patient, I am aquaporin 4 positive for NMO. And have been since I was 16, but didn't get diagnosed until I was 18. And throughout going to college and different universities, I went through many different career changes and had to switch up quite a few times, you know, between like nursing and, you know, physical therapy and then massage therapy. And then I finally went back to school and got my bachelor's degree in psychology after I went paralyzed and blind and paralyzed from my neck down in 2015. So went back to school for that. And then I decided to go on and get my master's in social work. And when I was starting that path in 2020, that's when I became an ambassador for the Samira Foundation. So this is my like fourth year with everybody.
Do you have any pets of your own?
Yes. So right now we currently have two dogs. I have one that is a Beagle Vizsla mix, and she's my baby, and she's 11 years old. And then the other dog that we have is a Border Collie Australian Shepherd mix. And that was my grandma's dog that, you know, we took him. He's now, whether he likes it or not, part of the family. And he's going to be 14 this year. So.
Oh, wow. I'm glad that you were able to come on and talk to me today. And you're going to kind of talk about pets from a little bit different perspective, perhaps more of a clinical aspect of it, things of that nature. So being a pet owner, what do you think about the role that pets play in promoting mental health and well-being for people with disabilities? And why do you think that bond is so important?
Pet ownership itself falls into having like three primary benefits for us as pet owners. So it falls into like the physical benefits that we have, the mental benefits that we have, like the emotional benefits and social responsibility kind of like meld into one.
Okay.
So many of them have been kind of, you know, observed in the world around us with oftentimes with people smiling with their pets when they're playing, and physical aspects that can come from walking dogs or getting on the ground and, you know, playing with either the dogs or your cats. And, you know, so it is kind of a nice symbiotic relationship that we have, which is interesting when I started looking into it, that mentioning that symbiotic relationship, dogs were domesticated over 30,000 years ago. And I mean, honestly, that kind of blew my mind that, you know, they have evidence and such that goes that far back. But cats were a little later on. So they were about like 12,000 years ago. But I mean, putting that into context, that's still a long time. But obviously, sometimes that's why, you know, these relationships can be so strong.
To talk a little bit more about some of the things you had touched on, I think when it comes to pets and people with chronic illness or even disability, a lot mm-hmm. of the times we think of like the service dog model. And well, there's service dogs, there's emotional support animals, and then there's companion animals. And I think an argument a lot of times can be made that, you know, most companion animals are emotional support animals to a degree. Mm-hmm. But looking at that emotional support aspect of it, how do pets provide emotional support to their owners?
Having that, you know, person, even though it's not really a person, that is kind of always there for comfort and support. And a lot of times they are a form of stress relief. And this is going to come back to kind of like some of the, it's kind of intertwined between physical and emotional, but dogs can reduce stress and they increase levels of endorphin production in the brain when you interact with them. And so it's like, you know, when you're stressed out or, you know, having a hard day, just, you know, play with your dog. You'll have someone who's there to like comfort you and unknowingly has better effect on like your brain chemistry than you really even know.
Are there other physical benefits of having a pet?
Yeah, interacting with them can reduce blood pressure, decrease your heart rate, and oddly enough, helps with moving around and, you know, joint health. And if you're going on walks or playing with them, it can increase like your cardiovascular endurance. And the walks obviously are good for them too, because it has kind of similar benefits of keeping them moving, working up the cardio, and, you know, keeping their muscles strong and joints flexible. And I mean, being an NMO patient, you know, spasms and, you know, locking up, you know, can sometimes happen. And so that's why we are kind of encouraged to keep moving and, you know, not remain sedentary.
I know after I had first gotten sick, my wife had gotten me a dog. And that was a big part of why she did it, was to give me something externally to focus on, helping encourage me to get exercise and just to engage and to move more, being able to provide for the animal, take care of them, feeding them, setting up a routine for that animal. There's so many benefits, like you were saying, that it pays off for us as well.
Yeah.
You've mentioned before you've had a pretty complex past medical history and you've had some pets. Looking back, do you see from your own experiences how pets have helped you cope with your illnesses or disabilities or some of the challenges that you've had to experience?
I honestly do. sorry for laughing, but my dog, Chloe, I got her, like I said, 11 years ago. And you know, back then I considered myself, I mean, relatively speaking, healthy, even though I still had NMO. I mean, I was up and walking around, you know, still kind of legally blind at the time, but I can still remember what her, like, you know, cute little face looks like. And, you know, it was kind of interesting to watch kind of like her reactions to me, because one of the primary things I wanted to do early on when I got her was expose her to things that that she might see, and I didn't want her to, you know, freak out about. Because oftentimes, you know, wheelchairs or walkers or even canes might be a little uncomfortable or something that might put them off. So early right. on, I would walk around my townhome, and I would use like my walker just to kind of like break her in and, you know, see how she reacted. And once I saw that she was kind of comfortable with it, you know, that put me at ease. And I'm kind of thankful that I did that before, because when that really bad relapse happened in 2015, I was in the hospital for a long period of time, but my mom would bring her up to see me, and at like the rehab center. And it was nice, because she was kind of the little sense of like comfort and home that I was, you know, missing. In addition to my family, it's like, oh yeah, this is that, you know, that little dog, that little person inside a dog body that, you know, I should be home taken care of, but instead I'm stuck here. So it kind of gives you a little bit more of that motivation. But, you know, seeing, you know, having her around to kind of comfort me when I was, you know, there in the wheelchair was really, I don't know, it was amazing, but also like painful at the same time, because, you know, at that point in time, I couldn't really feel anything. So mom was putting my hand on her and kind of saying like, okay, your hand's on her now, but I couldn't feel it, couldn't move my arm. But, you know, it was that, just having that like connection with her and knowing that she was there was so soothing for my mental state at that time. And I even pursued more of the kind of like canine therapy when I was in the Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago. I mean, obviously it wasn't a substitute for my own little, for a family at home, but it was a good way of kind of incorporating that whole aspect of therapy into, you know, the recovery. But since then, she knows when something's up. I think she could tell. Maybe it's because I've been around her so long.
Right. Just picking up on changes in your biochemistry and sensing something is different and something is awry.
Exactly. You know, she can definitely tell. And I kind of do feel that, you know, her and I are, you know, partners in this journey, and, you know, she's helped me probably in more ways than she even knows, with, you know, finding comfort in sitting next to her and then having her goofy little presence there on like the bad days to cheer me up, you know. So
right,
it's unique relationships, but it's some that, if anyone, as you know, as a pet owner do, you completely understand. They are absolutely happier than heck to see you come home. And when you're gone in the hospital and then you come home, it's like you've been gone for 10 years. So it's that unconditional love and support. That's just, I think that's why people seek it out.
You were talking about when Chloe had come to see you and how you didn't necessarily have the sensation to feel her. And it's interesting because from your past experiences of those moments cuddling with her and spending time with her and everything, you know, you were talking about the neurochemistry of those interactions, the things that are going on within our brains and the neurotransmitters, dopamine dumps and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so we become conditioned. So even though you weren't necessarily able to feel her, so to say, to feel her fur, your body was still acknowledging that there was that connection there. And you were probably still getting that dopamine dump just because your body had been conditioned to those feelings in the past. So I think that was a really interesting aspect of it. That's what we do in dog training, essentially, with classical conditioning. We take something that doesn't necessarily elicit a response, and we condition it to have that response, you know, through positive reinforcements and things like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with her being obviously part beagle, yeah, that treat motivation is through the roof.
So I'm gonna shift gears a little bit, because inevitably there comes that time where you have to deal with the reality of pet loss, and it's a topic that many people have gone through, and unless you're a pet owner, I think it can be hard to explain to people the impact that it can have on us. Is there a difference in the grieving process for a pet versus the loss of a human or a loved one?
There is no difference in the grieving process. I just recently took a continuing education seminar, and the grieving process, when they started listing everything that people grieve and what hits us hardest, it was they had the loss of a loved one. People like experience loss when they like lose a job, which obviously isn't anywhere near the extent of like a loved one or anything. And then losing a pet, you know, was high up there too. And your grieving response is the same, but each person's going to grieve differently. And, you know, each person's going to have their own unique way of trying to shift gears and find what is going to help them cope.
Right.
I mean, but what I did, you know, read and unfortunately, you know, experience is, you know, that loss that you experience as a pet owner when you unfortunately have to be the one to make that decision, that, you know, it's that time, and, you know, I don't even like saying the word euthanasia or like, you know, make that decision.
Yeah, it's a hard discussion to have and have with yourself and have with your family. Absolutely.
Yeah. And when you have to be the one, you know, to make that decision, your sense of like grieving and loss is actually amplified, obviously, because part of you feels like you've let the, you know, the dog down, you know, that kind of like betrayed their trust and not being able to do everything that you could, you know, to save them from whatever situation they were in, since they relied on you. And God, you just couldn't do it. You know, you couldn't fix that problem with their liver or anything. And so you've gone down that road, and it's painful to watch. But when you have to make that decision, it's unfortunately amplified by all those complex emotions and thoughts of, okay, well, I should have done this. Or, you know, we could have done that. And then, you know, oftentimes you'll leave there thinking, did I just really make the right decision?
Yeah, the weight of having that responsibility and then the second guessing can very easily send you into a downward spiral. Are there any healthy coping mechanisms or strategy that people can try to use to deal with the loss of a pet?
Well, kind of what I was, you know, hinting at before is that everybody's version of coping is going to be different. Like what we learned is that one of the best things you can kind of do early on is just acknowledge that, you know, it did happen, and denying it only makes it more painful and, you know, doesn't really get you to a better place. So right. It's kind of like nice for pet owners that have lost their loved one to kind of develop a ritual as kind of one of their means of getting through the harder time, whether that be getting out and exercising or spending more time with friends, you know, going for a coffee, you know, trying to keep yourself busy, not to take your mind completely off of it, because you do have to obviously deal with it in the beginning and face the fact that it's unfortunately reality. But yeah, finding your own, I guess, rhythm and adjusting to creating a life without that puzzle piece that you've had for such a long time is one of the ways that you can hopefully move forward and mend.
Right. We can acknowledge it, but we can't allow ourselves to get stuck in that place. We have to be able to find ways to move on.
Right. So, and like that's where your support system is. They can be there to help guide you through it. And they're going to hopefully play that key role in being someone that's going to listen to you and yet not judge you. So,
right. Speaking of your support system, and this is a scenario that I've dealt with as a dog trainer. You know, I'll see someone out in public and to find out that dog that they had, that we had worked with, had passed on. How can friends and family best support someone who's in the middle of that grieving process over losing a pet?
What I feel is one of the best ways is for them to be there for support, for listening, and for understanding, and honestly just allowing them space to get their mind back to a good place. Because hopefully, like I said before, they won't be, you know, judgmental, because that pet or that animal played a part in their life too. It may not be as, you know, as much of a part, but they've interacted with them, and, you know, they knew their goofy personalities too. So, you know, I think them being there to listen and maybe even hopefully share stories about, oh, hey, do you remember that time when, you know, they ran off with your keys or ran off, you know, just silly stories and stuff that can hopefully help mend your sadness and look back on like those joyful memories that you all shared together with that animal.
Right. I that's a really good point, is the fact that in all likelihood that their support system are also most likely grieving.
Yeah. I mean, I still have friends that, you know, remember our one dog. He was the brother of our Border Collie Australian Shepherd that we have now. It was his brother, and we lost him in 2020, and it still feels like yesterday. But, you know, my family and friends will still laugh and say, like, they're like, oh, my God, do you remember when, you know, Dexter, you know, leapt over all those boxes and, you know, down the stairs? And it's like laughing about, you know, goofy stories like that they can share, and all of that is just, I think, one of the calming and just comforting parts of grieving and setting up the stage for recovery.
Right. You alluded to it a few times, but there seems to be a lot of research on the topic.
One thing that I did come across as I was looking into the different topics is I was kind of like amazed by the like abundance of research that was actually out there. And, you know, how it pertained to people with taking that step into pet ownership. And oftentimes it was from people getting pets during COVID because they had that sense of disconnect from like the rest of the world, and they wanted something there with them that they could have like a strong relationship to, and it would help them, like pet ownership would help them get to a place of having some sort of social relationship. And then further on, there's even more research that is ongoing in like other countries to investigate the, you know, effects that, you know, they have on us.
Are there any other points that you want to touch on?
So one thing I did forget to mention was that sometimes the grieving process can take longer based on the level of attachment that you had to the animal. So obviously, it goes the same for humans, but the longer time you've spent loving and interacting and caring for them, you know, it's often much harder, you know, to break that attachment and more difficult to kind of get through that grieving process.
Right. Well, thank you for taking the time and chatting with us, and appreciate you sharing your experiences and your insights and some of the advice that we could use to deal with some of those more difficult times as a pet owner. So thank you again for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.